Okay, I did my personal ketubah in 2011, in October 2011. I didn't actually teach it to our church until beginning of this year, because God actually gave me no liberty to do so, and also they weren't ready to go through the same process that I was going through or went through. But actually now I've taught it, quite a number of people are actually going through the same process, but at least they know what it is, because I've described it. Because my ketubah, once I started it, it then opened up for me the engaging in my life with God from a perspective of, this could be very performance orientated. Like, I have this agreement in my marriage with God that I can use to demand God does certain things. But actually it's not about that, because relationships are about what we give into them, not what we receive out of them. God so loved the world that he gave his only son. So when you have let's say you get married and you make marriage vows between husband and wife, you don't bring the vows out every day and remind your partner that they need to keep to them. I mean, I don't think it would go down too well. But my responsibility is to be the best husband I can be. I don't demand my wife that she's the best wife. That's her responsibility to say, I want to be the best wife. My responsibility is, I want to be the best husband. So in my ketubah, I look at my ketubah and it framed how I live, but I don't use it other than it's my responsibility. I want to fulfill my part of it, you know, and that's how it's worked for me. And if we're going to live in dual realms, and that's how Jesus lived, John 3:12 says, if I told you earthly things, that is things that happen right here on earth, and you do not believe, how will you believe and trust me if I tell you of heavenly things? No one has gone up into heaven, but there is one who came down from heaven, the Son of Man himself, whose home is in heaven. So Jesus was living in dual realms. His spirit was engaged in heaven, seeing what the Father was doing, flowing that into the earth through his soul and body. He was integrated and one, and able to live in two places at the same time. I found that I couldn't do that. So Jesus in John 5:19, I only do what I see the Father doing. His whole life was revolved about the Father in him, doing his works through him and all those things. So how do we live in dual realms? Well, A, by faith. You know, everything you do in engaging heaven and everything else must be done by faith. You know, anyone who says, well, I need to see, then I'll believe, that isn't faith. Faith doesn't work that way. You know, I know that I'm in heaven because my spirit is so tuned into that realm that I've learned to discern how to listen to my spirit in my mind, like I do listen to the images that come from my eyes or the sounds that come through my ears. I've learned to tune into all those things naturally, and I practiced training my spiritual senses to hear God's voice, to be able to see into the Word of God as a doorway into the experience, and by knowing where my spirit is and living from that realm. And you know, my spirit now is in the realm of heaven. It sat on a mountain throne and it is ruling and administrating, flowing into me and out into this room. Now, I'm looking at you, and if I'm looking at you and speaking to you, I can't be focused in what my spirit is doing there. If I was to shift focus and engage in what I'm doing there, then I can describe it to you. But I can do that with my eyes open, and I'm talking to you, describing what my spirit is revealing from that realm, because I've consciously shifted into engaging it. if I, most of the time, I don't consciously shift into engage it. I just benefit from my spirit releasing into this realm everything it's preparing. And it's preparing to be able to do everything that God's called me to do, because I framed that in my life. So I live that way. Now, Hebrews 1 says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. So if you're always, I need to believe by seeing, then you're operating really in the same attitude that Thomas had. I won't believe until I put my fingers and touch this. That isn't what faith operates in. God always rewards faith. Now, often our cognitive senses don't always understand everything that we're happening to us when by faith we step into the realm of heaven. But it doesn't mean something isn't happening. Now, yes, it's good to train your imagination to be able to picture a doorway and then step through it. It's not good then to try and imagine everything that's going to happen, because you'll only get what you've always got before, because your imagination will be limited by what you've already seen. But the experience will not be limited by what you've already seen. Therefore, your spirit can experience things. Now, if you're visual and you've trained everything to work, that's great. And if I choose to do it, I can do it. But I recognize for myself, I want to spend all my time living in dual realms. I can't have two visions at the same time. I can't have this eye having one image and this eye having another. That's not what dual realms living is about. It's me being here on the earth, manifesting heaven through me here. So every day when I go into heaven in the morning, I go in soul and spirit, and I engage my soul in that realm with my spirit that's already there, and we have a great time engaging God, and I have cognitive insight into what's going on. When I go back into eternity, I leave my soul in the four faces of God, and my spirit goes back into eternity, because my soul could not cope with an eternal perspective. But my spirit can, because that's where it was birthed, and that's where it was born, and therefore it comes home. So then I step back in, my soul and spirit come back together, and my spirit leads me what to do and say. I don't try and work out, figure out what I'm supposed to do from a cognitive perspective. My spirit directs my cognitive senses to direct and guide me and lead me. That's how it worked. Well, I had to train myself to do that. Initially, after I was engaging God and going in, did my ketubah and everything like that, only my spirit and soul could go in. My soul would not allow me to go in and stay there, because it needed to know. And the whole process that God took me through to separate my soul from my spirit and then reintegrate it was what happened in the whole dark cloud experience. So my soul and spirit were always stepping in together and coming back out together. And you have obviously the exercises, well, I'm stepping in, I'm stepping in, out, stepping in, which is great until you need to step in and stay in and come back out in cognitive ascent and leave your spirit there. Well, your soul won't like that. So you have to deal with the soul. So I was visiting heaven, but I wasn't inhabiting heaven. So my redemptive gift is prophet teacher, and they're very sort of similar scores on the redemptive gift survey. So I'm wired by God to be self-aware and aware of the world, to engage that physical world, to understand it. It's like God wires me to work things out, understand them, see how they function, and then so I can explain them to others. Which is why I engage heaven in a right-brained capacity, but I teach in a left-brained capacity. So I'm not really a preacher who just sort of spires things off. I basically like to teach. So I like to explain and help people understand, because that's how God wired me to be. Now, other people are really different. Great, we're all different. We all got different redemptive gifts. But often our redemptive gift becomes where we get our identity. So I was actually getting my identity from what I was doing. So being a prophet teacher gave me identity, and that gave me security. I was secure when I knew what God was doing and what I was going on. I felt very secure. Everything was wonderful. So for the first 2 years of me engaging heaven on a daily basis, it was wonderful. But I wasn't living in dual realms. And God wanted to give me more than I could actually contain in my soul. So we had to do something about it. So my soul would not allow my spirit to engage in heaven on its own, because my spirit soul needed to know what was going on so I would understand, then I could be me. Well, things had to change. So the very core essence of who I am, redemptively, was actually being used to create my own identity, bring me security, in independence from my spirit. And it isn't a good thing to do, but it can seem very normal and natural, because that's how we've been. But things had to change. So this little phrase, which I like, me, myself, and I had to die. And often our focus is about me, myself, and I. That's the soul focus, because the soul is about self-consciousness. So it's designed to help us understand who we are and to be self-aware. But it should have never been independent from our spirit. So our spiritual awareness in our spirit should flow into our soul, and they should become one and then completely integrated, rather than separate and fractured. So Luke 9:23, anyone wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross and follow me. And Galatians 2:20 is good scripture. I have been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who lives, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live. Oh, I thought I died. Now I'm still living. Well, what's actually died is self living independently of spirit and of God. So now I live in the flesh. I live by faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me. And my desire, of course, is to love him and give myself up for him. But I can't do that if my self is not dead. And that created a huge problem. So my whole ketubah marriage process, with my 68 points, all my dreams, visions, everything God had shown me, all the things that I was aware of that I would been called to do in my destiny, I had put down. But this whole sort of prenuptial agreement, if you like, could be very orientated towards law if I wasn't careful. And again, as I said, you know, you don't bring your marriage vows out every day and remind somebody about them. You want it to be because it's relational and intimate, not because it's a law. You know, you don't want to live your marriage as a law. And same with God. God doesn't want to live our relationship with him as a law. So we use our ketubah as a reminder. When I actually dealt with this, I burnt it. I burnt it and I offered it up to God, and I never looked at it again for 4 years. When I looked at it again to teach it, because I thought, well, I better find some examples of what you put in one, so I'll look at mine and see what I put in it, I actually found that I was living most of it, whereas when I wrote it, I was living very little of it. So that 4 years, my spirit had enabled me to outwork that, and God had imparted that to me to live without me consciously trying to make it happen, which was what would have happened if my soul was still in charge. I would have tried to make it happen rather than God releasing it to me, because I live that way. So that all about love is all about giving and not receiving. It's so important. So literally my ketubah process triggered this sort of dark cloud experience. And it was quite an intense experience. And it's like this dark cloud was blown in by a cold wind that came from the north. If you read Song of Solomon, you'll see all sorts of that, different winds, and cold winds come from the north. And this felt like a very cold wind. You know, there are nice warm winds that come up from the south, which are great. This was a cold wind, and one of the angels, the winds of change, actually blew this wind over my life and blew this dark cloud over me. And from November 11 to May 2012, I went through an experience where this was at work, this encounters in the dark cloud. And there are lots of scriptures about dark clouds. Genesis 15:12, when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham, and behold, terror and darkness fell upon him. Now, he was sleeping, but actually terror and darkness still fell upon him. Deuteronomy 4:11, the mountain burned with fire, and the very heart of the heavens, darkness, the cloud, and thick gloom. Now, you know, you might think, oh, this sounds a bit like you don't want to go there. Well, from the outside, yep. From the inside, definitely. But from what, when you go through it, come out the other side, it's really worth it. Psalm 18:11, he made darkness his hiding place, his canopy around him, darkness of waters, thick clouds of the skies, from the brightness before him, past his thick clouds. Now, God does that so his person will not fry us. We experience his presence. His presence comes, his presence lives in us. His presence is in the realms of heaven. His person is very different from his presence. If we come and meet his person in our soul, there's a tendency that it would end up fried. So we have to come and deal with our soul. Psalm 97:2, clouds, thick darkness surround him, righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. So in May the 3rd, 2011, I asked God this question. Or my spirit did. My soul would have never asked God this question. I guarantee it. So my spirit in some way got me to ask this question. And I said, Father, how do I meet you in the fire and the smoke? And I said it. And that having said it, that set off a series of consequences that got unveiled. And God said this, Son, you have met me, but you've not been hungry and thirsty enough to come to me where I am, in the dark, thick cloud. You've held back, you've been fearful, you've not been ready to surrender everything. If you really want to come, you can, but you will never be the same. You can't act the same. You must want to come above all else. You must need to come. So, and that's how God speaks to me. When I ask him a question, he speaks to me back. And that's what he said. Then he went on and said this. You have too many encumbrances to come. They anchor you to the world. You must be willing to have them dissolved away. You've been far too comfortable. The gathering angels need to gather from you the things that hold you to the ground and restrict your range of movement. Son, I fear that if you would come now, you'd not go back. Prepare yourself, discipline the flesh, discipline your mind, surrender your emotions again, and I will welcome you in to see me. So, in one sense, I'm like, oh my word. In another sense, my spirit is saying, let's go, let's go, let's go. I want to go, I want to go. I want to come back home, I want to see you. So, October the 6th, so you know, quite a while from May to October, while I was avoiding it, God actually said during a worship time, I was lost in his presence. I was on the dance floor. I was swirling around with the cashmillium, and these colors were swirling around me, and his DNA was swirling around me, and I was having a wonderful time. And he said, I was asked, he said to me basically, will you spend the next 4 months with me in the garden, the dance floor, the smoking room, and the bridal chamber? So I mean, I thought, oh, yippee, because I didn't think anything about a dark cloud. I just thought, wow, we're going to have wonderful intimacy. This is going to be amazing. So I was instructed to make my ketubah, and that's when I made it. And it was only after I made it that I realized that I had to present it through the dark cloud, the canopy of darkness, for consummation. You know, and God told me, he said, February the 20th, 2012 would be a breakthrough day. So I thought, "Oh, okay, that sounds good. Let's go." So you have this whole heart and the dance floor and the soaking room and the garden and all these things and engaging your destiny and stuff. So, you know, as I described this now, you know, the garden, fellowship, communion, the laka, the dance floor, intimacy, identity, you know, the treasured soaking room, preparation oils, perfumes, ketubah, the contract, bridal chamber, consummation. So I have my 68 points, all my hopes, dreams, my visions, God's promises, my expectations, the whole lot. And it comes to the 1st of November, and I'm excited, come to the garden. I spend a lot of time in the garden. So, hey, I go into the garden, and immediately I can't see anything. And it's like the garden is now in darkness. So it was like, okay, God spoke to me and said, "Be still and know that I'm God." So the whole garden experience was, I need to know God, who is love, and that was obviously going to be tested. Oh boy, was it tested. Everything that happened, and you know, I mean, I know Psalm 46:10, "Be still and know that I'm God." Other versions say, you know, one of them says, "Step out of the traffic, take a long, loving look at me, your high God." Oh, that's pretty good. Sounds good. You know, Psalm 91:1, "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge, my fortress, my God, in whom I trust." And it's like, well, I'm safe. You know, well, my soul did not feel safe. My soul kicked off like it never kicked off before. Until God said, "Be still," I had no problem being still. As soon as he said to be still, I rebelled. My soul could not stay still. It asked every question during that month of darkness that I could have thought of. I wanted to know why God was doing this. I wanted to know what being still was going to do. Every single possible thing that my soul would have needed to know to make itself secure, I asked. And I fought being still for the whole month. And it was horrible. I mean, it was such a horrible thing, because my spirit, in a sense, was just not in control, which was not how I'd live, really. And but God was showing me what the potential was there and what needed to change, because he wanted to know whether I trusted him when I couldn't see. Because I would have said, I trusted him implicitly, but I didn't. I'm going to try this thing. So what happened was, I fought God for the whole month, and my soul just would not be still. And what God was basically wanting to know is, would I love him and trust him without seeing him and knowing what he was doing? Now, I only worked that out after, not while I was going through it. I mean, I can tell now what he was trying to get me to engage in, but all I could actually feel was, I can't see anything, I'm insecure, I don't know what's going on. Why? And I must have asked how many whys in that month. There wasn't any whys I couldn't have asked. God said only one thing. "I don't need your assistance, just your surrender." That's the only thing he said, other than "be still and know that I'm God." So at the end of the month, I heard that, and then I went into the next month hoping that the next month was going to be better, hoping that I'm going to go onto the dance floor and I'm going to have the light of God come around me. Because in the dance floor is made up of white and dark sort of stones, like tiles, big ones. And you can step on in the light, and you can step on in the dark, and you can come back into the light. I was in there and I was only stepped on the dark. So I was on the dance floor, nothing changed. I was in the dark and I was expecting joy. You know, well, what's joy? Well, I suddenly started to have an impression that joy wasn't what I thought it was. It wasn't a feeling or emotion based on my experience. Isaiah 40, verse 31, those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. That's what God said. He said, wait. That was it. Wait. So my soul started to say, why do I need to wait? What am I waiting for? What are you doing while I'm waiting? Because I still hadn't quite got the point. But I had this, I don't need your assistance, so surrender. And probably about halfway through, something changed. You know, so Nehemiah 8:10, the joy of the Lord is your strength. So wait, do nothing, see nothing, know nothing. That's what I was in. So could joy come from no external circumstances, only from relationship? That's what was being tested. Was my joy actually based on the wonderful things that were happening to me? Or could joy come just from being in intimacy with God and not knowing, seeing, or doing anything? Well, that might, for some people, seem quite an obvious thing. It wasn't obvious to me, not to my soul anyway. So my soul was looking for joy from my circumstances. And when the circumstances were great and God was giving me revelation every day and I was encountering heaven every day, everything was wonderful. I felt so full of joy. I felt miserable here. My soul was miserable having to wait. Now, at some stage during that time, I surrendered. I actually realized I'm not winning this battle. You know, I don't actually think that this period of what I was expecting is going to be what I thought it was, so I really probably need to embrace what it is going to be. So that whole month got by and I was just waiting in darkness with nothing else. So the next month comes, which is January, and I get in the soaking room, which is about being in peace. So He spoke to me and said, come and rest, rest. That's all he said, rest. So I know the whole scripture of some rest, and it's been a life scripture to me, and I live that scripture. But all of a sudden, now I was having to rest in the darkness. And I was able to do so. But what it again showed me was my peace coming from my circumstances of being in the wonderful things of God? Or could I be at peace doing nothing, seeing nothing, knowing nothing, and being nothing? You know, and it tested me considerably. So, you know, I was willing to take the yoke of Jesus. I was willing to surrender. You know, was I? Because I thought I was, but actually I wasn't. My soul wasn't willing to take the yoke of Jesus and surrender when nothing makes any sense. My spirit was, but my soul wanted to know. So I could be obedient when I knew. Well, that wasn't really going to cut it in what God was trying to reveal to me. So literally, my identity, my destiny, God wanted to release it, but I'm restricted from engaging it and totally frustrated because I needed it. It drove me. I was driven by my soul to find my destiny and find out what God wanted me to do and do all the amazing things that, because it gave me my identity and it was my redemptive gift and how God made me. But now God was saying, but I didn't make you to be this way independently. I made you to be this way integrated with me as one. So that was a real challenge. And then it was like, okay, the bridal chamber. And I was hoping that this was actually going to be better. But all God said was, wait expectantly in hope. So I didn't know how to do that other than I just said nothing. I just, in my time with God, I just waited. But, you know, I was thinking, well, my hope is I'm going to get out of this. So that was my hope. I'm going to come through this and out the other side. So God spoke to me and said, I want you to fast for 21 days, which would then end on the 20th, you know, the day that the breakthrough would come. After, you know, 6 days, I spent 6 days fasting, reviewing all the 15 months of the journals that I'd written, and, you know, I had a really good time for 6 days. Then I was drinking water, which was in this water container, which was poisoned. And so I poisoned myself with contaminated water. So it was like, oh, okay. So I basically threw up continually, couldn't keep any water down, and I hadn't eaten for 6 or 7 days. So it was like, okay, and that was it. My wife was sort of somewhat concerned with all the retching that she heard, because I was locked away in a room on my own. So I couldn't keep anything in the van for 5 days. I had no sleep for those 5 days. Physically, I was now on empty. All the reserves of energy I possibly had was gone. So not only now am I in darkness, physically I'm a wreck. And it's like, you know, and I wouldn't advise anyone to do what I did, obviously. But basically God just said wait, so I waited. I didn't basically get any attention or medical attention or anything else, although my wife was really trying to encourage me to. I just said, no, actually, God's told me to go through this, so I'm sure he knows what he's doing. And I didn't fight it. I didn't call the elders to pray. I didn't do anything. I just said, okay, God, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust that you know what you're doing, and I don't need to know. And this is the point where I got to the point where I don't need to know. I really don't need to know. I'm wrecked, but I don't need to know what it is. I'm just going to stay here like this. So basically, I just carried on. And literally, it felt like this was my test, my Garden of Gethsemane, if you like. Body, mind, emotions, will. You know, I got a little glimpse of Jesus' sufferings. Now, you know, I'm not saying this compares. It's like, if my sufferings were 100, his would be billions. You know, but for me, it felt like, everything was coming over me. It felt very similar to some of the scriptures. Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? I mean, this is what I felt like. You know, far from my deliverance are the words of my groaning. You know, I spent, 3 months groaning. Oh my God, I cry by day and night, you don't answer. And by night, I have no rest. Yet, you are holy. So, yet, I decided, I'm going to trust you. And I'm going to trust you. And essentially, that was the thing that my soul died. Myself in control died. You know, Psalm 22:11, be not far from me, for trouble is near, there is none to help. Many foes have surrounded me, strong foes have encircled me. They've opened wide their mouth at me as a ravening, roaring lion. I poured out like water, and my heart is like wax. It's melted within me. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue cleaves to my jaws, and my did. I mean, I felt really bad. And you lay me in the dust of death. Well, that was what my soul was going through. It was a very, very real thing. You know, physically, I'm totally empty at this point. But Psalm 42, as a deer pants for water, brooks, so my soul pants for you. So literally, what started to happen was, not just my spirit, but my soul started to draw from God on the inside. My soul stopped looking for the whole outside stuff and started to come. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? My tears have been my food day and night. While they say to me all day, where is your God? These things I remember, I pour out my soul within me. So this was a very, very real experience. I felt just like that. Felt that's what was going on. So at this point, you know, having not eaten, and eventually, you know, I'd sort of stopped being sick, I started to lose focus. You know, I started to not be able to think how to reason. I couldn't focus on anything. I couldn't even pray in tongues. I mean, I was struggling to do anything. I mean, it was just like I was totally wrecked. You know, Psalm 42:5. Why are you in despair, O my soul? Why have you become disturbed within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him for the help of his presence. O my God, my soul is in despair within me. All your breakers and your waves have rolled over me. I will say to God my rock, why have you forgotten me? Why do I go mourning? Because of the oppression. So emotionally then I started to feel really, really vulnerable. And my whole life and the vulnerability of how I was living just sort of became real. And it was just not really very pleasant at all. And I felt I need to put my house in order. I need to get, this can't be right. I need to come into a whole different way of life. I can't keep living the way I've been living, even though I would have said before I went into this, it was wonderful. But now everything was just put into context of my soul and my spirit. So my priorities needed to change. And I was now waiting in expectant hope. I was looking for February the 20th for breakthrough. And I actually thought, am I going to die or am I going to reach there? My soul did. I mean, you know, but, you know, things happened. So, you know, Philippians 4, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I will say rejoice. Well, that's not really very easy when you're going through something like that. But I started to rejoice. Something triggered, which was, I think, me giving up and surrendering completely. I started to rejoice. Now, Colossians 1:24, now rejoicing my sufferings for you and fill up my flesh with what's lacking in the afflictions of Christ for the sake of his body, which is in the church. So this is Paul talking, and I felt, hey, this is what I feel like. It's like, okay, I'm going to rejoice. Take me through whatever sufferings I need to go through that's going to help me fulfill my destiny and bless other people. So now my focus was not on self anymore. I started thinking about others in a totally different way. 1 Peter 4:13. To the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that you will also, at a revelation of his glory, you may rejoice with exultation. So I was looking for this exaltation that was coming. Hebrews 12:26, the whole thing about everything that was shaken would be removed. Only that which was the kingdom could remain. And since we receive a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer God an acceptable service with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. And I got to the point where I was willing to show gratitude, and my whole countenance changed in this. Although I was still physically wrecked, something changed. I started to feel the fire of God's presence, even though I still wasn't getting anything. So, you know, a whole river of fire and walking in the midst of the firestones, and night and day, there felt like I was in intense fire. All of a sudden, I was burning inside and out. Everything seemed to be burning. So this is where I basically burnt my ketubah. I just got it consumed by fire. And, you know, literally, it was like, you know, do you still love me? This is what God said to me. Do you still love me, having gone through all this? And I just felt, yeah, more than ever. Actually, I know I do love you now. Not based on what you do for me, or on what I expect you to do for me, or actually, you know. So my sense was all these waves of fire were coming over me, and I felt, and this is what happened, every one of those ketubah points, disappointment, loss, despair, despondency, grief, because I died to each one. And I really mean I died to each one. I grieved over each one as if they were never going to happen, as if they were now dead. And God said, do you trust me and still love me? And I honestly could answer yes, because I knew my love and trust of God were not based on knowing something about what he showed me, about what my soul needed. I loved him because of pure relationship of who he is and who I am. Now that totally changed. So now, if none of my dreams are realized, none of the prophecies came to pass, my destiny was never fulfilled, would I still love God? Yes. I knew that. Would I still trust God? Yes. Would I still have joy and peace? Yes. Because they were not based on the circumstances of my life. They were based purely in my relationship with him. So would I still be able to rejoice and give thanks? Yes, because I was rejoicing in the midst of it. Would God still be a good God? Yes, because he's always a good God. You know, this was because he loved me. This was because he had so much more for me that I could not receive while my soul was in control. God was searching my heart. Now, I don't know how many times I'd prayed Psalm 139, "Search my heart, O God." He was doing it. He was putting me on trial. He was testing the motives of my heart. God was showing me what my heart was like. God was refining and purifying my heart. Why? Because he loves me. He wanted to restore me to something before my soul was in control. He wanted to give me the fullness of his blessing. He wanted to release me into the fullness of his power and his person and his presence like I could never have gone to before. So now, could God trust me? Yes. Because I was not going to do things on the basis of my soul any longer. So it was not all about me, it was about him. You know, these are the questions that were posed to me. Was it about what he could do for me? No, no longer. Was it about what I could do for him? No, not anymore. Was it all worth it just for a relationship with him and nothing else? Absolutely. He went through all that on the cross to secure that relationship. And now I had a glimpse of what it meant. And for me, it totally changed my understanding of his love. So I could say absolutely yes. So now I could rejoice. 2 Corinthians 7:16, I rejoice that in everything I have, it was all about him. Isaiah 43:2, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they will not overflow you. You can walk through the fire, you will not be scorched. Now, I've been through it, and I know that that's true. You can embrace the fire and the waters of God in the dark cloud, and it will change and transform you. For you, it might be totally different from me. Whatever your redemptive gift is, he will start to put his finger on where you're getting your identity. And if it's being a good servant, he may challenge your serving. If it's being an exalter, he may challenge your exaltation. One of my friends is a ruler, and he can't rule at the moment. God will not let him rule, and he is so disorientated. You know, and I just laughed when he told me what was going on. I said, "Are you starting to do your ketubah?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "Embrace it. Don't fight it. Don't try and rule, because your identity is not from ruling. You rule because your identity is a ruler." And I have another friend who's a servant gift, and he's going through the same thing. Another friend who's prophetic gift, she's asking the same questions I asked. I just so smiled when I was talking to her, and she was saying what she was asking God, because she can't see and God isn't revealing anything to her and all this stuff, you know. So a ketubah can be a powerful trigger, but it's worth embracing the dark cloud. 2 Chronicles 20:15, the Lord says this to you: be not afraid or dismayed, for the battle is not yours but God's. When I surrendered, he now is in control. Psalm 24:8, who is the King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. You know, I knew that essentially nothing was going to stop me anymore, having come through this. So Sunday evening, 19th of February, I got to the point where tomorrow is going to be a breakthrough. I mean, total expectation of hope that I'm going to be totally touched. So as I reviewed all that God had said and all that he'd done, I got to Monday, and actually I was completely, totally restored, brought back into complete health and wholeness, instantly. Wow. So I had all my strength back, everything, you know, which was great, I tell you. But then I immediately went into the heavens. I immediately started to see. I immediately started to re-engage everything. But now everything was different. Now I could meet God face to face in the cloud, and I did. I went through the dark cloud. I went into the place of perfection, and I engaged the face of God. Now, I remember Ian Clayton talking about it and saying, don't look into his eyes. So I'm like, I mustn't look into his eyes. So I looked into one facet of his face, and it so consumed me and filled me that I just backed out of there. You know, and so I thought, man, I've been all through this and I can only look for a fraction of a second. So what else have I got to go through? But I've been back there again. Meeting the person of God is way, way more than the presence of God. And meeting the person of God opened up my life to be able to then receive all the things that I was hindered before. Because now I didn't need to know. Guess what? He could tell me. Now my spirit was flowing from that realm. Now my spirit could stay in the realm of heaven. When my soul came back into this realm, now I could live in dual realms. Everything changed. You know, I saw God on his throne, you know, and I had a vision one day of God with this large can of petrol, you know, gasoline, as an accelerant. And he was like smiling. And I thought, oh, what are you smiling at? He says, well, I'm going to pour this all over you. So I was like, well, okay. You know, and he spoke to me and said, Zechariah, you know, the Lord, I will be a wall of fire around you, and I will be the glory in your midst. And my whole engaging glory and the fire of God's presence, being able to go back into the fire stones, being going back into the consuming fire of God's presence, now my soul was not limiting me or afraid. It was surrendered. And this opened up in such an amazing way. And, you know, God just broke things off my life. He broke yokes and burdens and all sorts of things off my life as a result of that. There was such an increase of fire and glory and anointing. And everything really changed from that point on. So 2012, 12th of the 1st, 2012, which was in English, that's the 12th of January. In American, that's the 1st of the 12th. But I don't know why you put it backwards. But God started to speak to me and he said, I'm going to once again shake all things. I'm going to turn over the money changers' tables in the temple. I'm going to drive out the thieves and robbers from my temple. I'm preparing the whip right now to expose the attitudes and motives of your lives. This is obviously in 2012. And, you know, I remember I prophesied that there was going to be a 3-year preparation period. Now, the whip was not that God could whip us, that God could use a whip to make a line in the sand, to give us an opportunity to choose to cross over. And literally what he had done in me, he turned over the money changers' tables in my soul so that my whole life could be a place of his presence, not just activity, not just buying and selling, not just getting my identity from doing all this stuff. So I recognized what he said this, that we were going to go on a bit of a ride, wild ride. So for the whole year in 2012, I taught the Transformation Series, which was about how we can allow God to transform us by presenting ourselves as living sacrifices. God said this, I'm going to expose in my temple, the church, those who are using it for their own purposes. There will be many who are exposed for who and what they are. My temple will once again be known as the Father's house, a place of habitation. My temple will be known as a house of prayer, where my words of truth will set my people free, and that through free men, the world will be set free from the chaos and confusion and dominion of darkness it's in. My desire is to reveal sons to the world, true sons living in truth, true temples where rivers of my presence and power are flowing to fulfill my purposes. I am preparing the whip right now, so be ready for motives that are selfish and self-centered to be revealed. Obviously that comes from Matthew 21 and John 2. know for sure that my temple will be known as a true house of prayer. Now, the whole thing that God then taught me to do in terms of preparing a court case for judgment and justice and grace and mercy, releasing judgment into the old order, seeing that old Moses order come to an end, whole thing leading up to August the 8th, 2015, where that old order finished and the new one started and a new day, this was all part of that process. You know, I went through then 3 years of preparing and helping people to prepare so they'd be ready for what's coming. So can God trust us with all that he desires to give us? Because that's what he wants to know. Are we going to use it for us, or are we going to use it for him? Because the religious system is using it for self-perpetuation, not to bring glory and honor to God. Is God more important to us than what he can do for us or through us? And I'm posing the questions because I want you to ask them to yourself. I've answered them. That's what I did when I went through that period. It won't be unless God can purify our hearts. The pure in heart will see God. Now, it sounds quite an intense thing. As a forerunner, I hope that that will open up a way for you to embrace this process for your own life if you've not gone through it, and go through it by not fighting it. Embrace it, and it will be a shorter period than if you fight it. You know, I know that I cause breakthrough for others. So the question is, you want to follow, you know, and I said this 3 years ago, you know, in 2012, we had 3 years to get ready. And as a church, we were going to prepare. I mean, I had no idea what I was saying, other than I was saying what God was saying, but we went through preparation. I mean, there was such transformation that took place, you know, that then eventually we, you know, the transformation angel and all those made themselves visible, refiner's fire, sound of many waters, you know, winds of change. I mean, the whole thing is change. You can't stay the same. If you're going to embrace being the Joshua generation, you cannot do it as the Moses generation. You have to cross over into something new. God said this. He said, I have a great grace for this area. This place is going to be a city of refuge. It is going to be a harvest center and an equipping center for supernatural resources of heaven. I will release my glory on a humble people who are surrendered to my kingdom purposes. Now, this was back in 2012, before I'd ever had any thought of connecting with people around the world or doing anything. So God sort of thought, I mean, I'd never heard the term city of refuge other than a biblical thing before this point. So God was saying, as you've now allowed me to purify your heart, now you can actually be who I call you to be. Now you can actually start being ready and prepared for what's coming. God said this is not to condemn, but to separate. I will bring a sword and a fire to call out that which is mine. I will have a holy church, walking in the highway of holiness. I love my church too much to allow it to remain as it is. My desire is to raise up the gates to release my glorious presence. Are you willing to bow down so I can lift you up? That's what he said. I require spiritual authority be released in righteousness and justice. I want the Joshua and Calebs to mentor my united generation to walk in their inheritance. My desire is that none would perish, but you must be willing to abandon your man-made programs and return to the simplicity of my kingdom, not in wise and persuasive words, but in demonstrations of my spirit and power. Just be Christians, anointed ones, to be transformed into the image of my son. Minister and serve as he served, in power and a gentle and humble heart. I'm calling you to raise up a united generation that's ready and prepared to fulfill their destiny, so serving the purpose of God in their generation. So when I no longer needed to know, God unveiled places in heaven for me to walk in sonship. I began to engage beyond just performing his service. In Zechariah 3:7, you know, I'd walked in his ways in this realm. I was actually performing his service in that realm, But I wasn't governing the House, I wasn't having charge of the courts, and I certainly didn't have access to stand in the assemblies of God, in the higher courts. But now I did. So the last 3-4 years have been a continual progression, and the first thing God gives me an orb and a throne in the realm of the kingdom of heaven, and he started to teach me how to legislate. I was given be able to engage wisdom. I never engaged wisdom before that on her heights. Now that was open and access. So I was able to access everything that I'd already been through at deeper levels of experience and revelation. Everything went deeper. So everything I'd done took me to deeper levels of understanding, because now I was free. So now I was able to live in dual realms. Now I was able to flow heaven to earth. I was able to go gone beyond the arc of the presence, like I shared last night, of just finding out what God will was, to stepping into the four faces. I was then able to engage eternity within the heart of God, because now I wasn't going to go there with my soul anymore, because my soul no longer needed to go. So I was not going to be limited by this linear time-space continuum. I was able to access eternity in my spirit. So I then became able to frame my day with the oracles and legislation of heaven like I'd never done before. I was able to frame my life for time and blessing. So I was able to start contracting time and space. I couldn't do that before, now I was able to. So that's why I can do what I do today, because I'm able to fit into everything 20 times more than I could then. My capacity for the kingdom has expanded beyond limitation. So if I need to do something and I have no time to do it, I create time. I expand or contract time. You know, and I've done that literally and physically. So I've gone, you know, once I was in an airplane that was late and I was going to miss my connecting flight, and so was everybody else. So I decided that wasn't going to happen. So I sent an angel ahead of the plane to open an envelope, and what was an hour and 40 minute flight became 25 minutes. And we all got there on time and no one missed their flight. And you should see the look on the flight attendants' faces when they realized they were actually going to land before time, because they were saying nothing about connecting flights because they didn't want all the hassle from people complaining. Within the last 5 minutes of getting there, they suddenly started telling people where all the gates were, where they could catch their flights. And it was like, because I was now have the capacity to start doing something like that. So, you know, I have so many testimonies of things that I've done. Now I'm free for my spirit to lead and direct. I can use the authority I have to rule over the circumstances of my daily life like I could never do before, because my joy and peace and love does not come through those circumstances. So I've done many of these things. You know, I've been translated all sorts of places in the spirit. I've gone back into time in the spirit and been responsible for raising people from the dead and healing people and doing all sorts of stuff. I have such a greater capacity to outwork his kingdom. I could have never begun the Engaging God program and start mentoring 30 or 40 different groups every month because I had no time. Now I have all the time in the world to do whatever God's calling me to do, because now I'm free to rule from my spirit. I have such greater capacity. So, you know, living in the realms of the spirit, dual realm living, comes from yielding and surrender of the soul. Separation and reintegration of soul and spirit. So now I've gone beyond the visions and the visitation to habitation. I don't need to step in and out anymore. My soul steps in, and my soul steps out, and my spirit stays there. So I'm doing that all the time. So I can live in creative light. I'm living in the realm of before in time and authority. So my spirit now is in heaven, and that's before this realm in authority, so it can release everything into this realm and time. So everything's always available for me to have whatever I need to fulfill my destiny on a daily basis. And I have that as my expectation, and I live according to that. Hence, I can sit in a room of people, and people can ask me all sorts of questions, and I'm never fazed by it, because whatever the answer God wants to give is already available. My spirit has it in heaven. So everything I need to do to fulfill my daily mandates are prepared before time and are available from creative into created light in this realm. So So literally now everything really is flowing out of heaven into the earth. I've learned now to expand my spirit beyond the boundaries of my body to encompass various things that are my spheres of government. I could never do that before because my soul would never allow it. Now I'm flowing in those things. You know, I encompass my family, my home. I encompass our ecclesia. I encompass our area and our region. So my spirit has a wider sphere that I can engage into, speak into, minister into, and connect to because I've expanded it. Now, you know, you can't just do that. You have to practice. But the more your soul is surrendered, the easier it is for the river of life to flow through you and flow out into the world to create that atmosphere of life in the kingdom. So now I could make and use legislation. I was able to engage the Chancellor's Houses, the Circle of the Deep, go to the Galactic Council, or the Court of 70, all those things. Those were impossible when my soul needed to know, and are now absolutely possible when my soul doesn't need to know and I can just flow in it. So the question is, will you embrace the dark cloud so that God can set you free so that you can do all that God's called you to do? No? Okay, well, we'll leave it there. And we'll take another 20-minute break, and then we'll come back for questions and answers. Okay.
Oh, and in regards to question and answers, there's a paper and pen back there on the table, so if you'd like to write it out.